So what do we discuss on Saturday night? Some devotees were not here on Saturday night. So what do we discuss?
We discuss about saintly person, and we said that saintly person can go anywhere and ask for anything. So we saintly dress in a passport, what Prabhupada says, for entering anywhere, for asking anything from a grahastha.
There's complete harmony in the whole world. Therefore, atmosphere is Vaikuntha. They are all serving Krishna and nothing else.
Yes, the absence of lust, anger and grief. And then, because they understand that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. But here, we have complete understanding.
In relation to Acts 31, where the false Maharas displayed anger towards the two doorkeepers, Prabhupada explains anger, where he says anger does exist in the liberated state as well. But the difference is that in liberated souls, the anger is more for the benefit of those at whom the anger is directed at. And also it is when it restricts them from serving the law. Whereas in a conditioned soul, anger is mainly manifesting because of the desires for sense gratification not being fulfilled.
Is it correct to say they are not depressed on a personality level like that they are depending on a system level, that is how one is supposed to behave in the Vaikuntha, right? And next thing is how to rehabilitate them. So this was the four Kumara of the system, then they said the personality of the state as such. So they are thinking of the persons in Vaikuntha are supposed to behave like this, on general level like. And the purpose of chastisement also was that how to rehabilitate them, what's good for them.
Can you explain it like this, like there and here, maybe they needed some purification, then because of that they...
No. It's not like that. Prabhupada hasn't explained why this pastime has taken place yet. But it's not because they need purification.
The message from verse 32 is that by associating with the Lord, all pure devotees, one develops good qualities. And hence the four Kumaras are surprised how these people should have the quality of enmity. Because in associate with the Lord, they are not getting bad quality. You develop good quality. So it was very surprising for them.
Good question. We came to know that the four Kumaras, they passed freely through the six gates and they were stopped at seventh gate. Is there any significance of this number six and seven gates which leads to Lord, or they are just...
I haven't heard anything. Hasn't been mentioned. There may be some symbolism, but I haven't heard. Any other points?
Why were the doormen there in the first place?
Their service is to guard Vaikuntha.
But there's no need of guarding Vaikuntha.
And Prabhupada mentioned there's no need of cleaning Vaikuntha. But the devotees, we read earlier in the chapter, the devotees are always cleaning Vaikuntha. But there's no dust. So it seems that it gives devotees some service to do. For some reason the Lord desires there's guards there, even though there's no need for the guards.
But the sages were so elevated, couldn't they have taught them in some other way other than cursing them?
Yeah, but there's a reason why it all takes place, but Prabhupada hasn't mentioned it yet. So stay tuned.
The four Kumaras are going, like we read in the translations, they are very eager to see the Shri Hari, the personality of God and all, but only after they see the Lord and smell the lotus, tulsi of his lotus feet, they become Bhagwan realizers.
You can't have his back to Giri. You can't put your back to Giri. You have to sit on the side. Yeah.
So right now they are still Brahmavadis, no? So,
yeah, Prabhupada says.
So then why were they eager to see the personality of Godhead?
Sorry?
And why were they eager to see the personality of Godhead? Like what was...
Because it comes up to that. Prabhupada mentioned this at the longest time.
So one more question. The fact that you know this pastime is just a drama, somehow it, maybe it's me, it does not give me that indication that I need to learn something from here. So, because we know that they are just, they have to behave like this. So that man wants to 40 years, they are just like the prophet, for example. Like if again we see, like, Brahman, he behaved in a manner which just teach a lesson to us. To some extent, we can understand what the logic is there, why Brahmaji was associated with his own daughter. But in this case, we know that this is just a drama, means. So, I don't know what to pick from this.
Well, the main lesson is do not offend the verdicts. That's the main lesson. That's the main thing which will be there. You'll see, as the pastime unfolds, and we'll see the many lessons which are in the past.
It's also
looking
to try to describe the world for eternity. For eternity, they were good servants, but still they made one small offense, and they were punished in such a world. So we have to be very careful. Amy, it says in Brahma Bhuta Plasma one is equal to everyone, but they didn't act equally towards the four stages. Especially they were in renounced order and they should have treated them very differently.
I also don't agree with what Prabhu said, there's no lesson, it's not appropriate because Prabhupada clearly mentions about the sannyasis, how you have to treat and how when four Kumaras were traveling the last six tours, the first six tours, there are many offenses but they didn't care about it. This lesson for us, you know, we should not be, get sidetracked for when we, there are six steps, you know, we always take the steps. So there's always, each and every purpose is a lesson for us.
Yeah, it's true. Anand was just saying that the spontaneity is taken away because there's some arrangement there, so like that. So it is from that level, but still, then we have to look deeper, right? As Bharata was saying, we have to look deeper and see what are the actual lessons which have been drawn out from the pastime. Because as he said, in every purport, there's practically so much instruction which has been given to us. So we have to look very deep. Go beyond the mind's analysis.
So that we can say that if you are getting advanced in devotional service, there is always one obstacle, that is to become proud. Because Krishna is giving us a lot of strength, and that's because of that some people they become proud, and because of that proud they try then to commit offenses. That will be part of the ground for them.
Good point.
I thought that devotional service makes you humble.
Yeah.
Not proud.
It doesn't always work out like that. Pure devotee is humble, but everyone else is not. I don't think we're very humble. Prabhupada's humble, but I don't think we're very humble. Okay, so we see in the beginning of chapter 13. What was chapter 13 called?
The appearance of
Varaha. So Lord Varaha appeared and dove into the Garbhodaka ocean and was confronted by one demon who he killed, whose name was Hiranyaksha. So then after this pastime was performed, then Vidura inquired from Maitreya Muni, who was that demon? What was the origin of that demon that he would fight with the Lord? It has to be very powerful to fight with the Lord. It can't be an ordinary personality. So then, chapter 14 was called
Pregnancy
of Diti in the evening. So then the description is given by Lord Brahma, it's given by Maitreya Muni, but he quotes a description given by Lord Brahma of how Kashyapa and Diti united together at an inappropriate time and in an inappropriate way. And because of that inappropriate union between Kashyapa and Diti, then there was an inauspicious result. And that inauspicious result was the birth of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So then we see that although this mistake was made, benedictions were given to Diti that your son will be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And your grandson will be a great devotee who will appear in Canto 7, Prahlad Maharaj. So then, in the 15th chapter is called Description of the Kingdom of God. So in the 15th chapter there is the description of how the four Kumaras, who were these two personalities, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So it has been described how the Kumaras were travelling towards Vaikuntha and they entered into Vaikuntha. And as they entered into Vaikuntha, as you've heard in this chapter, they have approached through the six gates of Vaikuntha, they have got to the seventh gate and they've been stopped by the two doorkeepers in Vaikuntha, Jai and Vijaya. And there has been an exchange between them which was very unpleasant. Jai and Vijaya tried to stop the four Kumaras entering into Vaikuntha and the sages became extremely angry to such an extent that they've cursed Jai and Vijaya to fall into the material world. So now we'll see the pastime will continue tonight. We'll go from verses 36 to 44. And we'll finish the chapter on Saturday night.
Because they were practicing austerity, so austerity can bring liberation.
Generally that would be the case, but there's an extra element in the story also that Prabhupada hasn't described yet. Okay, so we'll begin verse 36. After being cursed by the sages, the doorman said, "It is quite apt that you have punished us for neglecting to respect sages like you. But we pray that due to your compassion and our repentance, the illusion of forgetting the Supreme Personality of Godhead will not come upon us as we go progressively downward." Such a book is good.
To a devotee, any heavy punishment is tolerable, but the one which affects the forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord. The doormen, who were also devotees, could understand the punishment meted out to them, for they were conscious of the great offense they had committed by not allowing the sages to enter Vaikuntha Loka. In the lowest species of life, including the animal species, forgetfulness of Lord is very prominent. The doormen were aware of that they were going to the criminal department of the material world, and they expected that they might go to the lowest species and forget the Supreme Lord. They prayed, therefore, that this might not happen in the lives they were going to accept because of the curse. In Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, verses 19 and 20, it is said that those who are envious of the Lord and his devotees are thrown into a species of abominable life. Life after life, such fools are unable to remember Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore they continue going down and down.
So what are the points here?
Forgetfulness of Supreme Personality of Godhead is very prominent in the lower species of life. Mm-hmm. And that's the distinction between a devotee and a non-devotee. Mm-hmm.
In Bhagavad Gita they say that Neha Vikrana Shoshita Kroyana and Vidhi Sortum Kita Dharmasya Sahite Manto Vaya. So, I mean, even if you're in this endeavor in the spiritual way is lessen the greatest fear of falling down into an animal species. So, and that's the greatest punishment is to forget the Lord, because in animal species you can't remember the Lord.
Consequence of offending the Lord might be being covered by Maya and forget the Lord. And Vana Swami, he often says that due to the offenses one may lose the head, and in here we can see not necessarily in this lifetime, but in next lifetime, next few lifetimes one may lose the faith in the Supreme Personality of God.
Good point.
Good point.
Any other?
I think in Bhagavad Gita chapter 15 verse 15, the Lord says that both remembrance and forgetfulness is given by me. The Lord controls us through remembrance and forgetfulness.
How does that relate to this point?
So by making us forget, we are not in touch with the Lord.
But they must have forgotten. Otherwise, how can Hiranyaksha fight with the Lord and his brother if he gives so much trouble to the devotee of the Lord?
Yeah, so they did forget.
But they wanted the benediction that they don't forget. So the sages didn't give that benediction. Okay. So they were not kind, were they?
Yeah, there was a kindness there.
Previously we read that if one commits the sinful activities or the regulative principles, it's very likely that they commit further sins and they go down further. And here it is mentioned that forgetfulness leads to further forgetfulness and away from God. So one should be very careful and should not cross the lines.
So we have to be very careful as devotees that we don't perform any activity that will make us forget Krishna. Because for a devotee that is the most reprehensible thing, is to be able to forget Krishna. So you will forget Krishna if you make mistakes, if you act improperly, if you speak improperly, and if you think improperly. This is the point. This is why within your mind, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to learn to practice mental control. Because if you don't control your mind, then whatever goes on in your mind, it will come out in due course of time in your speech and your activities. So you can't just say, well, I'm just thinking it, but I'm not saying it, I'm not doing it. Sooner or later it will come out. You can't keep thinking it and it will not come out. So a devotee has to be very careful not to contemplate sense gratification. Because if they're contemplating sense gratification, sooner or later you will act. You will think, then you will feel, and then you will, and then you will do it. Like that. It cannot be avoided. So therefore, the mind needs to be purified. And similarly, one way that we can forget Krishna is by performing sense gratificatory activities. Another way we can forget Krishna is by being offensive, committing aparads or offences. And the most serious or heinous of all offences is Vaishnava aparada. Because if you offend a devotee, then it will be very difficult for you to remember Krishna. Because Krishna will not tolerate the offence and he will withdraw his mercy. And if Krishna withdraws his mercy, you will lose your taste for devotional service, and then you'll forget Krishna. That will be the reaction. So devotees have to be very careful about any activity or any speech or any thought that will lead to forgetting Krishna. So in your mind, if you are committing offences to devotees, if you're criticizing devotees in the mind, sooner or later it will come out in the speech and in the activity. And then as soon as it comes out, then you begin to blaspheme. Then offences will be committed, and if offences are committed, then Krishna withdraws the mercy, and then you're in ignorance. This is very dangerous. So this is the lesson which is being drawn out at this point in time. Do not perform activities which will lead to forgetting Krishna. So we see the nature of the doorkeepers, Jaya and Vijaya. As soon as they committed some offence and they realised their mistake, immediately they rectified it. This is the nature of a devotee, as we mentioned on Saturday night also, I think. It's not that a devotee commits an offence and then doesn't do anything about it. That's not devotee. Sometimes you see devotees, they offend each other, but they don't do anything about it. They're both too proud to apologise. And then it goes on for years and years and years. They won't talk to each other. So this is very dangerous. It's actually not a positive symptom of devotional advancement. Because if someone is actually advanced as a devotee, if he does commit some offence, immediately he'll rectify the offence. Prabhu, I'm sorry. Please accept my obeisances. Please forgive me for I committed the offence. Sometimes we may offend a devotee without knowing. And in due course of time, Krishna will reveal to us that some offence was there. Immediately you have to go to that devotee and rectify it. Otherwise it will lead to forgetfulness of Krishna.
But what if you don't realise that you have committed?
Krishna will reveal it to you in due course of time. If there's an offence there, then Krishna will reveal us in due course of time.
What is it too late then?
It's never too late.
Depends whether you want to listen when it's on time or not. Because Krishna sends many warnings. You want to listen or you don't want, it's up to you. If you want to suffer more, then don't
It's never too late to apologize. Okay. The nature of a devotee is the devotee is always compassionate, always forgiving by nature. So, if you've committed an offence and you approach the devotee with sincerity, the devotee will forgive you. That's the nature of a devotee's heart. They will forgive. Yeah, unless it's a very serious offence, and then you may have to make it up to the devotee for a period of time.
And sometimes the devotees put other devotees in great difficulties, and they cannot make up for that, and we have to be very careful what we are doing.
Yes. Yeah. So at least on our behalf, we should not commit offence. That's the point.
Sometimes it is very difficult to realize, what we have done has offended someone.
Yes, very hard.
And like Mataji is saying, it's very difficult to realize when we have put someone in some difficult situation.
Yeah, but Krishna will reveal to you like that. Like sometimes, generally it's not so hard to work it out.
Actually, we feel that if we are really conscious about things, we will feel that we have done something wrong and we apologize. I don't know, I feel like many times like
that. Yeah, sometimes you feel like sometimes, you walk into the temple and you walk up to some devotee and say, Hari Bol, and they just kind of, look away and just walk away. So then you realize, I did something. So then, you have to think, usually you can work it out quite quickly. Krishna will reveal it to you in your heart, what did you do? Oh, I must have done something. And then Krishna will reveal it, or else you just go to the devotee and say, Prabhu, did I do something wrong? You seem upset with me, did I do something wrong? And then the devotee will say, yes, you did something wrong. What did I do? And the devotee says, well, you did this and this. And then you say, well, I'm very sorry, I didn't realise. I had that nature, problem is in the material world, we all have conditional natures and we have bad character. All of us have faults. So, we don't mean to. It's just like one thing that I do is I like to joke around. Right? But sometimes, I joke too much and someone gets upset. I didn't realise it. I'm just joking, but I do too much and then they get upset. And then I didn't realise it. And then later on, then they... I can tell because they're upset. I can see they changed their attitude towards me. So then you have to apologize to that person. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. It's my fault. You know, I have these defects. So we have to, if we detect that there is some defect and we've committed some offense, the point is the devotee must rectify it. That's the point. Like that. And then you must appease the devotee by serving them. Like that. And bring them back to...
But it's hard again, that what's the guarantee that we might not do the same thing again? You know, it's the nature. don't mean any harm to... But
the point is, over time, a devotee has to be improving in his character. That's what Krishna wants to see. The spiritual master wants to see that the devotee is improving in his character over time. If he's not improving over time, the spiritual master tolerates, Krishna tolerates. But if it continues year after year after year, you're not learning your lesson, then that means you're not following the process properly. Devotees should be getting over their faults in due course of time.
But is it appropriate to react like that if someone, for example, let's say that devotee was us, that someone offended us, and actually devotees are very forgiving, no? So even if next time we see that person who has offended us, is it appropriate to behave like that when they say Hari Bol, we look away and walk away or something?
If we do it or if they do it?
If we do it.
No, we shouldn't do it. But they might do it. The point is that you shouldn't do it. Yeah, that's your fault. If you do it, then right? But sometimes, like, if someone upsets us or does something wrong, like sometimes someone will do something and upset us, and then, you know, we don't say anything because that's our nature. You know, we don't say anything, and then it goes on for some time. But you know, you can't get over it in your heart. And then later on, the devotee says, you know, Prabhu, did I do something? And you say, yeah, there was something that you did that upset me. Like that. And then the devotee said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it to upset you like that. He said, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm too sensitive.
Wouldn't it have been better to stop them then and there and say, look, this is hurting me, or, you know, it's rather than keeping and then showing them in a way that we turn our face or something.
Yeah, it's easy to say it philosophically, but we don't often do that. It's like if someone upsets me, you know, usually I don't go to them and say, you know, Prabhu, yeah, did you realise you did this? Usually I just become upset, and then, you know, usually what I do is if someone like does something which upsets me, then I go away from the situation and I try to overcome it in my heart. And many times we can overcome these things. You know, we can learn to get off the false ego platform. I mean, just say, listen, that wasn't a big deal, and we can push it away and be humble. But sometimes we can't because we're not advanced enough to overcome these things. So it's not, you know, it's not usual that we come to people and say, you know, or upset. Usually we just hold it within ourselves. But the point is that if we detect that the devotee is upset with us, then we must rectify it. And that's what Jaya and Vijaya did. Jaya and Vijaya didn't say, you know, you guys are just kids. You know, what are you doing here anyway? And who do you think you're cursing? And, you know, we've been here for 3 billion years and, you know, what's the problem? No, immediately they understood there was some defect on their behalf. Right, and this is the sign of a great person. Right? If someone's actually a great person, then they will admit their faults. Doesn't matter how great they become. Right? They never think, oh, I'm so elevated, I'm so great. You know, I'm such a respected person. I don't have to apologize to someone. Someone who is truly great, who has truly great character, then even if they're in a very exalted position, but if they do something wrong, immediately they'll apologize. That's their nature.
Duryodhana,
because they still have to fight and retaliate for that, because Krishna wanted that. So it seems like sometimes when it's gone too far, it has to go with the force, has to apply. Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I mean that's quite exceptional. Sometimes, just like sometimes within the temple community, right? An individual who comes into the community, he causes trouble. So it's wrong for the management to just tolerate and tolerate and tolerate and tolerate. No, that's wrong. Should be chastised. You know, removed from the community or penalised or something. It's wrong to not do that. So it's not that we're sentimental. We have to know when. Devotees have to become wise so they understand when to apply something properly. Like that.
If we analyze why we offend, most of the time it is envy in the mind. That's why we are trying to offend.
And envy or ego?
Right.
More ego than envy.
It's envy is a symptom of ego. That's all these things. Yeah, it's true. It's envy. So we see what happens is that it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it's mentioned other places because Prabhupada often describes it. But it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself. What takes place at this point in time, in this conversation, is that Jayant Vijaya is given two choices. Do you want to go to the material world for 7 lifetimes as devotees and not forget Krishna? Or would you like to go to the material world for 4 lifetimes as demons? Well, actually it says 3 lifetimes. 3 lifetimes as demons. And you'll forget Krishna. So they choose, even though here they're saying we don't want to forget Krishna, but they choose 3 lifetimes because they want to come back to Krishna as soon as possible. And they understand it is the Lord's desire. The Lord desires to fight. And there's no one to fight with in the spiritual world. Because there's no disharmony in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha. So they understand the Lord has a desire to fight, let us take birth as demons and then we can fight with them. Because when the Lord comes to the material world, there's no one to fight with anyway, because everyone's too weak. So the only way he can have a decent fight is if he sends his own associates, who become so powerful when they enter the womb of their mother, they blacken the entire universe. Mm-hmm. Right? Only because they're giant, big giant. Right? They're the Lord's eternal associates, that's why they're so powerful. So they take on a demoniac bath, an Asuric bath, and then they fight with the Lord and that gives the Lord satisfaction. Okay. At that very moment, the Lord, who is called Padmanabha, because of the lotus grown from his navel, and who is the delight of the righteous, learned about the insult offered by his own servants to the saints. Accompanied by his spouse, the goddess of fortune, he went to the spot on those very feet sought for by recluses and great sages. So the Lord immediately, how did the Lord respond? Because the Lord is all-knowing, he is cognizant. He understands everything at all times. So immediately he understood, my devotees are in distress. Right? They're cursing and counter-cursing each other. So immediately the Lord arrived at that spot in order to satisfy or to save his devotees. Because he understood the devotees were in danger. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, declare it boldly, that my devotees shall never perish. So immediately, the Lord is so great a personality, the Lord considers himself to be the servant of his devotees. That is his greatest quality. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes this in Madhurya Kanambini. Out of all of Krishna's qualities, what is his greatest quality? That he is Bhakta Vatsala. Right? He is the devotee of his devotees. So therefore, he immediately comes to the rescue of his devotees. And he comes there to see what is going on. My devotees shall never perish, I've declared this. So he goes there to rectify the situation or to try to appease the situation in some way. This is how great the Lord is. The sages, headed by Sanaka Rishi, saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was formerly visible only within their hearts in ecstatic trance, had now actually become visible to their eyes. As he came forward, accompanied by his own associates bearing all paraphernalia, such as an umbrella and a chamara, fan, the white bunches of hair moved very gently, like two swans. And due to their favorable breeze, the pearls garlanding the umbrella also moved, like drops of nectar falling from the white full moon, or ice melting due to a gust of wind. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that for an ordinary person, it is not possible to see the Lord. He cannot be seen by any materialist. The only way to see Krishna is through the process of devotional service or purification. One must purify the senses. And Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Ataha Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriya Sevam Mukhihi Jivado Swayam Eva Sparatyada. The senses must become purified. And the more we purify the senses, the more we can perceive Krishna. This purifying the senses begins with the sense of Prabhupada explains in this verse. Sevhan Mukhi Hi Jiva.
With the tongue.
The tongue is the most voracious sense. And it's with that sense that we first begin spiritual life. And we become purified by engaging the senses in Krishna service, especially that sense. Spiritual life begins by using the tongue for its two activities. One activity of the tongue is tasting and the other one is speaking. So we begin to purify our consciousness by only tasting foodstuff which is offered to Krishna, Krishna Prasad. This begins to purify the consciousness. This is how spiritual life begins. That's why Prabhupada began the movement with prasadam distribution. It's interesting, 1966, in 26th Second Avenue, Prabhupada's first temple in ISKCON, Prabhupada said, there's one conversation Prabhupada's having, and he said, they did not come for the kirtan. They did not come to hear him speak. They came for the prasad. That's how the movement began. Yeah, people did not come, Prabhupada was being humble. He said they did not come for the kirtan, they did not come to hear me speak, they came for the prasad. Because Prabhupada would cook the feast. Imagine. You know, imagine taking the prasad that was cooked by Prabhupada. Umapati Swami, I was with Umapati Swami in 1994 in Jagannath Puri. We were taking prasad, as devotees, we went there for a yatra. And we're taking prasad with Umapati Swami. One of Prabhupada's oldest disciples. He was initiated by Prabhupada in 66. One of the oldest, with Mukunda Maharaj and Hayagriva and Brahmananda Prabhu. So I said to Maharaj, we're taking prasad. I said, did you ever eat anything cooked by Prabhupada? And he said, yes. And he said, it was not from this world. What Prabhupada cooked. Was not. So Prabhupada would cook the feast. He would serve the feast out. Or he'd clean up after all the hippies. That was Srila Prabhupada, right? And Prabhupada says that's how their spiritual life began. Right? By chanting Hare Krishna with their tongue and by tasting Krishna's prasad, their spiritual life began. Right? That Prabhupada created the good fortune. Right? So this is how spiritual life begins. You cannot perceive Krishna with material senses. Unless the senses become purified, then you can begin to perceive Krishna. So the process of purification must be followed, and the more the senses become purified, the more you can perceive Krishna. Just like you'll see, the longer you practice devotional service, when you go before Gaur Nithai and Radha Balabha and Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, then when you go before them, the more realization you get, right? As time goes by. If you purify your senses more and more and more, if you purify your consciousness, your mind, your heart, your intelligence, your senses, the more you engage in the service, the more you can perceive Krishna is there, the more you can perceive Srimati Radharani is there, Gaur Nithai is there. You know, everything becomes, this is the process of purification. And it goes up and up and up to the point where Prabhupada describes in the purport that you can see Krishna in your own heart. You can actually see his form. It means you can begin to meditate on Krishna's form. When you become very advanced, when the anattas are cleared away from the heart, you can remember Krishna constantly and be meditating on his form constantly. And then by further purification, Prabhupada explains, he quotes Brahma Samhita, Premanjanach Charita Bhakti Valochanena. You can actually become so purified in your consciousness that by prema, then your eyes become tinged with the salve of love. Prabhupada explains in the purport, you see Krishna face to face. So this is what happened to the Kumaras. The four Kumaras had been yogis, And they were meditating on Super Soul, and they saw Super Soul in the heart. They actually had Paramatma Darshan. But then when they went to Vaikuntha, and that person they saw in their heart came towards them, and they were just overcome by seeing that personality. So this was the perfection of their meditation. So all this takes place by following the process of bhakti, of devotional service. And one day, the goal of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, is to see Krishna face to face. Prabhupada says in the last line, one can see the same Lord directly as we see everything else. Just like we see each other here, face to face, the goal of Krishna consciousness is to be able to see Krishna face to face. That is the goal. Okay. Prema. Okay. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence is meant for everyone's benediction, and His affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. The Lord's beautiful bodily colour is blackish, and His broad chest is the resting place of the goddess of fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world, the summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Anand, can you read the first part?
When the Lord came, He was pleased with everyone. Therefore, it is stated here, Krishna Prasada Samukham. The Lord knew that even the offensive doormen were His pure devotees, although by chance they committed an offense at the feet of other devotees. To commit an offense against a devotee is very dangerous in devotional service. Lord Chaitanya therefore said, an offense to a devotee is just like a mad elephant turned loose. When a mad elephant enters a garden, it tramples all the plants. Similarly, an offense unto the feet of a pure devotee murders one's position of devotion in devotional service. On the part of Lord, there was no offended mood, because He does not accept any offense created by His sincere devotee. But a devotee should be very cautious of committing offense at the feet of another devotee. The Lord, being equal to all and being especially inclined to His devotee, looked as merciful as at the offenders as at the offended. This attitude of the Lord was due to His unlimited quantity of transcendental qualities. His cheerful attitude towards devotees was so pleasing and heart-touching that His very smile was attractive for them. That attraction was glorious, not only for all the higher planets of this material world, but beyond for the spiritual world also. Generally, a human being has no idea of what constitutional position is in the higher material planets, which are far better constituted in regards to all paraphernalia. Yet Vaikuntha planet is so pleasing and so celestial that it is compared to the middle jewel or the locket in the necklace of the jewels.
It's one of the points here.
All is equal to all. He is looking at them mercifully, at the offenders and the offended.
Any other thoughts?
One should not commit any offenses against another devotee.
The Lord is very merciful. He looked at the offender as well as to the offended person. In the same way. So He did not put the offender to down. It's equal to both of them.
Also Prabhupada said that Lord doesn't accept the offense created by His sincere devotee.
What does that
statement
mean?
Ask me.
It says that the Lord never gets offended by His devotees, but And that's why the devotees never get a reaction for example for several times unless you're really committing them again and negligently. But he takes offenses of one devotee to another very seriously.
So Mahaprabhu teaches this point in his teachings to Srila Rupa Goswami. There's that famous verse in the teachings to Rupa Goswami by Mahaprabhu, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. So Mahaprabhu is teaching that devotional service is like a bhakti lata, which means the bhakti lata beej. The beej means the seed of devotional service is planted in the heart by the spiritual master, and it is watered by the process of shravanam kirtanam, shravanadi jal. Right? By watering with hearing and chanting, our devotion grows and grows and grows and grows. Now Mahaprabhu points out in his description that of all things that one must be very careful of when one is cultivating his devotional kripa is the hati mata. The hati mata means the mad elephant. Because if a mad elephant comes into your garden, then it doesn't matter how nice the garden is or how big the fence is or anything. When an elephant goes mad, there's not very much you can do. It will destroy everything. So the hati mata means Vaishnava aparada, offending devotees. If devotees commit offences to other devotees, it can destroy your devotional service. Now, the more advanced the devotee, the more serious the reaction becomes. If the devotee is a pure devotee, and you offend that pure devotee, which sometimes people do, they commit offences, it's just like, we don't even like to talk about things like that, but there was one disciple of Prabhupada, so-called disciple, and he began to associate with others besides Prabhupada, like other personalities. And then he became influenced by them, and then he came to Prabhupada and he said, please bless me that I will get a real guru. Said to Prabhupada, he said, please bless me that I will get a real guru. Like that, because in other words, he was saying to Prabhupada, I'm going to leave your shelter and I'm going to take initiation from other people. And Prabhupada said, I bless you, will you get a real guru after 60,000 lifetimes. You don't want to get that kind of, you know, blessing from a pure devotee like Prabhupada. It's just foolishness. That person, he's still a devotee, that person too. He still has interaction with ISKCON. He's not like totally inimical or anything, he's just, for some reason, he became like that. But the point is that if you offend a pure devotee, your spiritual life can be finished. Right? And the more advanced the devotee and the more serious the offense, right, then the more serious the reaction becomes. Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, in the later chapters, where Bhrigu Muni is commissioned by the sages to go and visit Lord Brahma and then Lord Shiva and then Lord Vishnu. So Prabhupada explains at that point that offences can be verbal, they can be mental, first of all they can be mental, mentally we can think ill of another devotee, and then verbal is worse, you actually say something, and then corporal means you actually commit physical violence to another devotee. So that is the worst, like that. So according to how advanced the devotee and how serious the offence is, it can very much disturb your devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya himself, the Supreme Lord himself, in the form of the Bhakta Avatar, in the form of the devotee, he warns us, be very careful about offending Vaishnavas, other devotees, because it's what the one thing that can destroy your spiritual advancement. Going back to Godhead, it will make it very difficult. So, the nature of the Lord is that he immediately becomes very concerned that his devotees are being offended, and he comes to that place and his disposition, the Lord's disposition, is that when he comes there, he is smiling. Because in this situation, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, there are sincere devotees. So this is Jayant Vijay, who are his eternal associates, and the four Kumaras, so they're very exalted personalities. So he comes to that place and he has a favorable disposition towards both parties because they're so exalted personalities. So the point which Prabhupada is making in the purport that is, if the devotee is sincere and he accidentally, just like we do deity worship as Russell was explaining, sometimes we do deity worship, we may commit some small offense to the Lord, but if we didn't mean to do it, then the Lord does not take offense. He may give some slap, you know, just like you might accidentally, you know, do something to him, so he may slap you back, like that. But because you're his sincere devotee, he doesn't take offense. He's not offended. Mm. He doesn't keep the grudge and, you know, every time you come into the deity room, you know, there's nothing that's just there on his behalf. He's always very merciful to his sincere devotees. So if the devotee is sincere, the Lord will not take it seriously. So in this case, between the Kumaras and Jayant Vijay, the Lord is still very favorable to each party. And the Lord is smiling here, which means the Lord himself does not become inimical towards people. He doesn't become envious towards people. He doesn't get caught up in bickering or... Just like if someone offends us, right? Then it's very difficult for us not to begin to criticize that person behind their back. You know, if someone treats us badly, right? Very hard for us to not start saying things about them behind their back and developing a whole attitude towards them and mentally thinking, you know, I'd like to push them off a bridge and, you know, we think all sorts of things and say things and become very caught up. But the Lord is so exalted that even though there is all these things are taking place, he doesn't become changed in his disposition. And it mentions in this verse he remains cheerful. Right? So even when the devotee commits an offence, and even when the Lord is punishing us for an offence that we may commit, but still he's smiling when he does it. Because the Lord is in such an exalted position, his consciousness is so pure, and if he's not affected by the modes of material nature, whatever he does with us, in whichever way he deals with us, usually he's just smiling. Right? If he sees us do some, perform some nonsense activity, or he sees us do something, then the Lord may rectify us by that, and he may slap us around a little bit, but he's smiling. Because we're his devotee. So he doesn't become all angry and disturbed by us. Like that, but he will, you know, if the devotee behaves well, he smiles at the devotee. If the devotee does some nonsense, he's still smiling, but he may slap you around and do something, you know, like that. But he doesn't become upset or he doesn't become disturbed. Unless someone really offends one of his devotees. Right? And then he becomes angry like the Shringa. Right? If he sees one of his devotees, like when Prahlad was attacked by Hiranyakashipu, then he became ferocious. He'll change at that point. But normally when he's dealing with his devotees, then he's always happy like that. But if you do nonsense, then he'll rectify you. Right? If you behave properly, then he'll treat you appropriately.
He says in
So how the people in the higher planets could see it too? The Lord is smiling. See, this thing happened. It's happening all this in Vaikuntha. Right? But in this says that the people in the higher planets of the material world could see it too. The Lord is smiling.
In the purple?
Yeah, I see. 1 to 6 and 6 to 9 after the 2 the first paragraph the 1 to 6 for all the high planets of the future The attraction was glorious, not only for all the high planets.
Planets of this material, beyond the spiritual world also.
Some of the people in the high planets could see that.
No, it's not that they could see. It's just saying that he gives benediction to people in the material world and in the spiritual world. It's not saying that the demigods could see what was taking place.
Okay.
So in the second paragraph, Prabhupada points out that the Lord is equally disposed, not equally disposed, but he is well disposed even to the impersonalists. He even gives them his mercy. That's the Lord's nature. Even if someone's an impersonalist, still he gives them his mercy also. It doesn't matter who approaches the Lord, he's always in a cheerful disposition. He's always ready to give benediction. Generally, when someone deals with us, then we will reciprocate according to the way they deal with us. But the Lord is so exalted in his consciousness and so pure in his consciousness, even if someone comes to him is inimical, or even if someone comes to him with some strange mentality, but still he will give them benediction. So the Kumaras have come, and they are impersonalist at this point in time, when they approach Vaikuntha. They're not pure devotees at this point in time, but the Lord is very favourable towards them. Right? He's willing to give them benediction. So that's the Lord's great nature, that's his mercy. Text 40. He was adorned. So now it actually begins to describe the Lord's... actually described in the previous verse also. But it continues to describe the Lord's own form. Okay. This is the amazing part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other scriptures of the world, you will not hear these kind of intricate or detailed descriptions of God's form. In the Bible there's something there, but not like this. Mm. Not this kind of description. He was adorned with a girdle that shone brightly on the yellow cloth covering his large hips. And he wore a garland of fresh flowers which was distinguished by humming bees. His lovely wrists were graced with bracelets, and he rested one of his hands on the shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, and twirled a lotus with another hand. So we should learn how to dress the Lord when we do deity worship according to these descriptions. Because the Lord is a person. Right? And this is the description of the Lord, and we should dress the Lord according to these descriptions. And it says that he wears a golden dhoti. So in general, Krishna wears a golden dhoti. So if it's available, then we should offer golden dhoti like that. It said he's wearing bracelets at this point in time. It describes what the Lord is like. You know, the peacock feather is there. Like that. This is Lord Narayan, but still we should learn the descriptions of Krishna, which he also given, and we should dress him appropriately. And we should dress according to what he is wearing. Just like sometimes you see the deities. And the other thing we must understand when we're worshipping the deity, the deity is a person. So people dress and they wear particular things like that. Just like sometimes you see when the pujaris dress the deities, just like Gaunitai, they kind of stick like, it's almost like they stick earrings or something on the deity's fingers, and they kind of hang over the edge and stuff. They put like brooches and stuff. Like, have you ever seen someone wear like a brooch on their finger?
Rings.
No, not even a ring, but like a brooch, like something kind of hanging off a finger or something like that. Like, you don't see people walking around like that, so why would the Lord be like that? Just like sometimes, you know, like different things they do, devotees will do, they put the like, odd things in odd places on the deities. But you have to understand that, you know, you wouldn't walk around like that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's no description of Krishna walking around like that. It doesn't say anywhere in the Bhagavatam that Krishna has like a, you know, like a kind of hanging brooch coming off his finger. Yeah, but it doesn't describe like that. So the Lord should be dressed as he's described.
He looks pretty,
Krishna. Looks pretty. Yeah, but he's a person. What does he do when he eats? Right? How can you eat if you've got something hanging off your... Yes, the Prabhupada gave us permission to use that when we dress the deities, so that's permissible. But the point is that we should be, he's a person. Like people wear, you know, bracelets, and they wear rings, and they wear these things. But some that you see sometimes is very odd, the things that they do to the deities. It's not what, this is described, you look in the deity worship manual. This is actually what the GBC is instructing us. This is the way Prabhupada taught us. The point is that Krishna is a person. And sometimes the pujaris don't dress Krishna like a bit, like you wouldn't do it to yourself. You wouldn't dress one of your kids like that.
Think that you know
Vaikunth
is beyond what we see here, so they're using their creative talent, I guess.
Yeah, it may look good, but the point we're trying to make is that God is a person. That's the point we're making. It's not that it may look nice, but God is a person, so he's a person. The point is he's being described here in the Bhagavad Gita. So as he's described, that's how he should be dressed. Like that. He shouldn't be dressed differently to the way he's described. That's the point.
But he cannot just every day wear yellow dhoti. Every day we cannot put yellow dhoti.
Yeah, we don't put yellow dhoti every day, but the point is that if we have an option, we should put it. Just like sometimes it describes that Lord Chaitanya wears a golden dhoti because he is Krishna,
mm-hmm.
and Lord Nityananda wears a blue dhoti because
mm-hmm.
he's Balaram.
Mm-hmm.
So some of their sets are yellow and blue. But over the years, it doesn't happen very often, but over the years I've seen them when they're dressed, Lord Chaitanya is wearing blue and Lord Nityananda is wearing gold, right? And that's not it's the way it's described. So the point is that we should learn from the Bhagavad Gita what the Lord likes, how he is, and we should worship him like that.
Mm-hmm. Not speculate. Mayapur, I think they're following Buddhism.
Yeah, Mayapur they're following.
No, not Buddhism.
He's not that dark complexion, Prabhupada. So why have they made him so dark?
The
stone is not that dark complexion.
From the marble. Is that what you say?
No, what I want to say is like a black moss and cloud color.
Yeah.
It's, but they make it so dark black.
Yeah, well, it's hard to find that color rock. That's why they use the black marble. Okay. Did we read verse 40? Already? Alright, yeah. So, Prabhupada points out in the purport, that God is a person. He's a personality. It's being described here in the Bhagavad Gita that when the Kumaras saw the Supreme Absolute Truth, what did they see? They saw a person? Right. It wasn't that, you know, giant Vijay, you know, stop the Kumaras, and then the Kumaras cursed them, and then a big Om sign came out of, you know, Vaikuntha. You know, a big light suddenly came out of Vaikuntha and, you know, came towards them, and the light said, you know, and the Kumaras said, you know, and the light said, you know, you have to go to the earth for this many times. Like that. It wasn't like that. It's a person. The point is the Bhagavad Gita describes that the absolute truth, the Param Satyam, Dhimihi, that which is meditated upon, the absolute truth, is a personality. There's no impersonal description in the Bhagavad Gita. This is the kingdom of God. This chapter is called Description of the Kingdom of God. God is a person. Right? Now what sort of a person is he?
Transcendental person.
Yes. What sort of a person is he?
Eternal.
What does the word Krishna mean? All attractive. Right? When the Kumaras saw him, immediately they were just captivated. Right? He's the all attractive person. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. His countenance was distinguished by cheeks that enhanced the beauty of his alligator-shaped pendants. Huh? It describes that Krishna's earrings, and this is Lord Narayan, but Krishna also, his earrings, they are said to be the shape of what?
Shark.
Yeah. What do they call it in Sanskrit?
Shark.
Shark, yeah. In Sanskrit they call it shark. No, they call it shark. What do they call it in Sanskrit?
Makara.
What does makara mean?
Fish.
Yeah, it means sea monster. It's a sea monster. So sometimes it's shark, sometimes it is like alligator like that. Sometimes you see it's an alligator, sometimes it's like a shark, like a big fish, some sort of sea monster like that. So Krishna's earrings, is the earrings that he wears, that shape. Okay. Who could have made this up? You know? You could, you know, the most wildest imagination couldn't have come up with this. Right? It must be true. You know, one reason why we can argue is these descriptions are true. There's not like the absolute argument. But, you know, I mean, whose imagination could have came up with these things? You know, that God has like shark-shaped earrings, which he wears. Right? It's amazing. This is the type of...
But he would wear different ones all the time, wouldn't he? Not just one, like...
He wears different ones, but generally they're this shape. This is what he likes. He can put on different ones each time. The point is that he wears like a longish earring. He doesn't wear a stud. Right? Doesn't wear a hoop. Right? Wears it like a longish earring. So he wears different ones each day. Changes them all the time, but that's what he prefers. He may even wear the others sometimes, but he prefers that. Okay. And it says here, as it's described in the Nectar of Devotion, that his form enhances the beauty of his ornaments. Generally in the material world it's the other way around. People are quite ugly in general. Once in a while you'll meet someone who's attractive. But generally people are quite ugly. So what do they do to enhance themselves? Right? Put on earrings, put on necklace, right? Put on, you know, so much jewelry to make them look attractive. Right? Then people are all attractive. What are they attracted to? They're attracted to the gold and the diamonds. It's not the person. It's the gold and the diamonds. We say, oh, you look very nice today. Right, but then take off everything, then you just don't look very nice. But the Lord is the opposite. It describes in the Nectar of Devotion, also here in the Bhagavatam, the Lord is so beautiful that he makes the ornaments attractive. Right? The ornaments become more attractive because they're on him. Like that. It's not that the, you know, put the earrings on and everyone says, oh, the Lord is attractive. No. His cheeks are so beautifully shaped. His face is so beautifully shaped that the ornaments are attractive being on him. That's how beautiful Krishna is. That's how beautiful the Lord is. His countenance was distinguished by cheeks that enhanced the beauty of his alligator-shaped pendants, which outshone lightning. His nose was prominent, and his head was covered with a gem-studded crown. A charming necklace hung around his stout arms, and his neck was adorned with a gem by the name Kostuba. The exquisite beauty of Narayan, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord, who thus manifested himself, is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded him with unsated eyes and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. So it is described here, and Prabhupada describes in the purport, that the Lord is the most attractive personality in Vaikuntha. And it describes here that even the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, her beauty, and she is the most beautiful female counterpart of the Lord, her beauty was diminished in comparison to the Lord's beauty. He is the most beautiful personality within the creation. However, did anyone read the purport? How many people are in here tonight? 28 or something? Did anyone read this? Yeah, that's the point. Okay, now we're going to read something which is astonishing. Right? Because the next major festival day is Radhashtami. So listen to this. Right? This is what Lord Chaitanya is teaching. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching. Like that. It is just said here in the third canto of the Bhagavatam that Narayan's beauty completely outshines Lakshmi's beauty. Right? But because we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas and we are following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he is teaching based on the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, which we'll come to in about 37 years. Then in the 10th canto, we'll see what is being described. This is what Prabhupada says. It's amazing. In the words of Vaishnava poets, it is said that the Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds of thousands of cupids. He is therefore called Madan Mohan. It is also described that the Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Poets describe that under those circumstances, Lord Krishna is Madan Mohan. He becomes Madan Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi and Vaikuntha. The devotees of the Lord in Vaikuntha planets want to see the Lord as the most beautiful, but the devotees of Gokul or Krishna Loka want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. This is the mood in Vrindavan. This is what Lord Chaitanya is teaching. This is the super excellent position of Srimati Radharani. That she controls Lord Krishna. Like that. Madan Mohani Mohini. Right? She is so enchanting that she enchants the mind of the all-attractive personality. So without her mercy, we cannot approach Krishna. Prabhupada points this out. We'll hear this on Radhashtami. Burujan Prabhu will be here for Radhashtami. He's flying in the dead for Radhashtami. Actually, Jagdareen Manaji might be here too. She's passing through. So, on Radhashtami we'll hear that Srimati Radharani, by her mercy, we can approach Krishna. But without her mercy, we cannot approach Krishna. Right? We chant, every day, we chant the Maha Mantra 16 rounds. If you chant 16 rounds a day, you're chanting 25,000 names of God a day. If you chant 16 rounds, 25,000 names, 16 names times 108. Okay. But before, every time we chant the name of Krishna or Rama, we chant the name Hare. Hare is Srimati Radharani. So in other words, we are continuously begging, Srimati Radharani, please give us Krishna. Please engage us in Krishna service. Not give us Krishna, please engage us in Krishna service. That is Radharani's super exalted position. That's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching. That's what Lord Chaitanya is teaching. So in order to get the mercy of Lord Krishna on Janmashtami, we must observe Balade Purnim very nicely. And in order to get the mercy of Srimati Radharani on Radhashtami, then you have to observe Janmashtami very nicely. And then Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. And now we have to begin to meditate. Not long to go now. Only 9 or 10 days of Srimati Radharani as the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. The most merciful personality. It's her appearance that is coming. So now we begin to meditate on that. And if you're very fortunate, you might even be able to assist the devotees in making Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna's flower Pushpa out there. Very auspicious. So many services we can do for Radharani. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulasi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in body and in mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. The Lord's beautiful face appeared to them like the inside of a blue lotus, and the Lord's smile appeared to be a blossoming jasmine flower. After seeing the face of the Lord, the sages were fully satisfied. And when they wanted to see him further, They looked upon the nails of his lotus feet, which resembled rubies. Thus they viewed the Lord's transcendent body again and again. And so they finally achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. So this pastime is actually quoted by our acharyas to prove a very essential point, that the personalistic conception of God is always superior to the impersonalistic conception. And the proof is this example of the four Kumaras, who were impersonalists, they were monists, but when they came in contact with the personal feature of the Lord, they lost their attraction to the impersonal understanding of Godhead, and they became overwhelmed with Bhagavan realization. They became bhaktas, devotees. So this example, and also the example of Shukadeva Goswami, are often given by our acharyas to substantiate this point, that the personalistic conception is superior to the personal, to the impersonal conception. This proves it. Now, how did they become attracted to the Lord? They saw the Lord, and then finally, they smelt the aroma from the Lord's body. It wasn't actually just the Tulsi, like often we hear the description, they smelt the Tulsi coming, it was actually the Lord's body actually has a transcendental aroma. His form has a transcendental aroma. Right? And the Tulsi and the saffron and the sandalwood paste, which was on his lotus feet, mixed with his aroma, and when that all of that entered into their nostrils, they just became completely. Okay. So this is the transcendental nature of devotional service. If one comes in contact with Krishna, just like when people take Krishna's prasad. I remember years and years and years ago when I first became a devotee, I was in a car park somewhere in Melbourne selling books, and I met one man, and he came towards me, and then I gave him a book, and I was talking to him, and he said, "Oh, you're a Hare Krishna." And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Yes, I've been to your temple, to the Sunday feast." And he says, "What is that food that always makes you happy when you eat it? What is it called?" And I said, "Oh, prasad." He said, "Yes." He said, "When have you eaten it makes you happy?" And I could see he had realization. Yeah, he had a realization, because whenever you contact Krishna or something to do with Krishna, because he is transcendental, right, and all pure, then immediately you become purified in your consciousness. So the sages, when they approached Krishna, they saw him. When they saw Narayan and they smelt the aroma of Lord Narayan, then their mind and their heart and their consciousness, everything became purified and transformed, and they developed bhakti. So this is the process. The process of becoming attracted to Krishna is engaging our senses in his service. And that is our whole mission in ISKCON. It's just to engage everyone in Krishna's service, just bring them in contact with Krishna. Therefore Prabhupada said, distribute prasadam, distribute books, distribute the holy name, because when they come in contact with Krishna in these transcendental forms, their consciousness becomes overwhelmed and purified. And that's how people become devotees. That's how we become the words. Okay. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.